This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 204, Hot to Trot Hots. Hello and welcome again to another edition of GamesAtWork.biz. I am joined here at the lovely Bean Traders, where we haven't recorded a show in quite a while, with my friend and co-host, Mr. Michael Rowe. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. And yeah, it's been a while since we've been at Bean Traders. Luckily, work got in the way of recording at normal time, so we're doing this at a special time.
Special time, so, which is going to put a
cool
crimp in our style.
All kinds of good stuff to talk
about.
Yeah,
and we have a little more relaxed opportunity to kind of go through all the fun things. So as we take a sip of our coffee, let's dive right in, shall we?
Yes, we shall.
All right. Yeah, I could say adult beverage, but, you know, coffee is not just for adults, as we all know.
That's right. And it stunts your growth. So kids, don't drink coffee.
Unless you're European, in which case it's good for you and you should have as much as you want.
And if you're European, go ahead and have a beer and a nice glass of wine with dinner.
So, as long as we're making recommendations on all kinds of things, first thing for the show is a recommendation of a cool poster for those of you who love bots. And this show is going to be all about bots. Well, maybe not all about,
not all
but
about,
mostly,
but pretty damn close.
Almost all about bots. This is one poster that was done by artist Dominic Tran, and it has a ton of robots in it. Caught my eye, thought it was a lot of fun, and you had a pointed element that kind of bugged you just a little bit on one of the bots in there, didn't you?
Yeah, I can justify it, but I didn't like it. So, dead center, bottom of the poster is Iron Man. So it's Tony Stark in the Iron Man suit with the helmet off, so you know it's Tony Stark.
Yeah.
And so Tony Stark, as Iron Man, is not a robot. The suit can fly to him, which it does in one of the movies.
Right.
And Jarvis is an AI.
That's in the bot.
Jarvis is an AI.
Yes.
Not a robot. Because he becomes instantiated in, and I can't remember the name of the guy in Infinity War.
Oh.
The diamond in his head. The Soul Stone or whatever. Time Stone. Sony Stone.
Didn't see
head.
It. I know. Waiting for a plane flight.
No, it wasn't even Infinity War. It was the one before that. It was Avengers, blah, blah, blah.
Magneto?
No, not Magneto.
Well, maybe our vast listening audience will help fix this for me because I haven't seen enough of the comic movies here. I was really happy to see Helper in there, which was one of my favorite bots. Bender is a favorite bot, too. So
yeah,
all
Bender
kinds
was
of good
in there,
ones,
which
yeah.
is really cool. I like Bender. And There's multiple bots, many multiple bots from Futurama, and as a fan of Futurama,
yeah,
it was cool to see.
But what I didn't see was Meku Barbara, which is from South Park, which is a combination of Godzilla and as a mecha form, and Barbara Streisand.
I was about to say, I thought it was Barbara Streisand was part
Barbara,
of that.
Barbara, Barbara. So anyway, check this out. You will love
really cool.
to see this. As much as we did. And if you scroll down just a smidge, you can see where one person has already taken a crack at naming the 262-ish bots on there, and you can see where they are.
Cool.
And order it if you want to.
Yes.
So what if you were interacting with one of these bots, or AIs, could be Jarvis.
Are you sure you are?
How could you be sure?
Uh-huh.
How could you be sure we're not bots? Actually, that's a really tricky thing, isn't it? So MIT Technology Review had an article that explored this just a little bit. And some of them, using Twitter as sort of the background, to know if you're interacting with a bot or not, especially given what Twitter's done in, the last couple weeks?
Yeah.
The purge.
Bot purge of 2018. And you know what? I was actually pretty pleased.
Yeah? How many followers did you lose?
Almost none.
Oh.
Because I've gone through periodically
and
followed people myself and purged people. Yeah. And if I think they're a bot, I flag them and get them off my list anyway. And so I'm still at about the same 1,500, 1,800
yeah.
people. So
Yeah, I'm certainly a lot less than that, but I flag them on the way in. So some of the tricks that they show here from a Twitter perspective is, hey, if there's not a picture, that's probably a keen idea that they're a bot. If what they're tweeting about...
the same stuff over and over and over again.
They're like, probably
listen to gamesatwork.biz. Listen to gamesatwork.biz. Listen to gamesatwork.biz.
We're not a bot. You can check the CAPTCHA on that.
The number one thing to tell if they're not a bot is they claim not to be a bot.
I'm not a bot. You're a bot.
I'm not a bot. You're a bot.
If they claim you're a bot, then you're a bot. Or not a bot.
Not bot.
Or wouldn't be a bot.
Bot or not.
Bot or... Ooh, bot or not.
We should...
That's a website. All right, so before we publish this, we're going to go look for bot or not, and that'd be cool. All right, so great way to provide a few handy hints if you are curious about how to protect yourself from bots.
And there is a website, botornot.com.
Darn it.
It's actually botpoet.com, but the title of the site
resolves.
Is bot or not.
Yeah, so. Okay. All right.
Bummer.
Well, no, that was...
Actually, I looked through this, and to me, there was nothing new and exciting on this one. This list of five things, it's like, you know, they repeat stuff, they change context for no apparent reason, they don't have a decent profile.
They just do a lot of retweets of stuff and don't tweet things themselves.
You know, this is one of the big things that I remember at conferences and kind of... 5-6 years ago, the big thing was in your keynotes or some of your large presentations is to have a Twitter feed on the right hand side.
Right,
say,
so people can interact with you as you're
Talking. Yeah. Just tweet to hashtag, you know, conference 2019.
Yeah.
And then invariably within like 3 or 4 minutes, you'd start seeing the bots and the spammers kick in because they would look for what's the trending hashtag and then they would put that on their spam tweets and they would just start flowing in there.
Yep.
So.
So you kind of need a dynamic hashtag that evolves over the course of a presentation or something so that that way you could kind of filter out the spammers.
A self-learning hashtag.
Ooh.
There's a patent in there somewhere.
There might be a patent in there somewhere. And so next link, this is now we're moving more from the AI to the real robotics for those of you who consider a robot being, RI.
Robotics Interactive.
Or robotic automation? Robotic intelligence? Man, let's go with that. Robotic intelligence.
All right.
So this particular...
Ariman.
Well, now we're going to compose a song. That'll be fun.
Yes.
The title caught me, but what really caught me was the way that this... best way to describe it in my mind is a claw.
It's a robot.
It's an appendage.
Claw is a robot. I don't remember what from, but I remember a robot named Claw.
Wasn't it an Inspector Gadget? And it was like the hand from one of the guys or something? Or the claw? I don't know. But the way that this particular appendage is used to capture jellies, you know, when you're out in the ocean, seemed to be pretty cool. So what caught your eye when you saw this, Michael?
Well, obviously the clickbait headline was quite appropriate. And that was, you know, underwater Pokeball snatches a soft body deep. Dwellers. Looking at the design of it, right? So, I guess, what is it? Is it the 12-sided dice?
Dodecahedron.
That uses the 5-sided.
Yeah. It uses a hex.
Hexagon. Panels, right?
Well, no, it's a pentagon, isn't it?
Pentagon, yeah.
Yeah.
5-sided. Pi.
Yes.
Five.
Pi.
Pi.
Whatever.
That didn't work.
No.
Anyway. and so what they've done is they've put this 5-sided panels into the shape of a ball, which is, I believe it's a 12-sided figure.
It is. That's a 12-sided die. Absolutely.
Okay, that's
D&D. I had a gray one.
Yes. I was trying to remember the different colors of the dice that I have. And the fingers on it open it up so it comes to fairly flat. And they can then, as fish or other soft body swimming things come near it, they can close it and actually wrap it around. So I actually thought, you know, the physics of it were really, really interesting. The Pokeball reference was there only for clickbait. But Yeah. It made complete and logical sense is the nice part about it, right? There's a really cool little animated GIF that's embedded in the article that... I wonder if we could steal that as our show graphic.
Oh, we won't steal anything. We'll reference it directly if we were to do that. But it's just the way that it articulates and grabs things, I think, is really incredible. And when you think about it, the way that a human hand works with the opposable thumb is useful because you can now move that around in many of the same ways here and grab something that is that has a firm surface or is something that's kind of a soft surface and encapsulate it properly. This one actually allows for the encapsulation within that three-dimensional shape.
Now, the interesting part would be, and they don't really show it well in the video, is how well it seals.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, these are swimming, living creatures. And if it could seal completely, then you would have it in the water for then bringing back to the lab.
Well, and then you would disentangle that shape from the claw as well, because then you really would have a Pokeball, because that the creature would be encapsulated within the water, within the shape, that three-dimensional shape.
Yep.
So speaking of underwater kinds of things, we saw in the Engadget links an interesting DARPA-sized, insect-sized shrimp, is what they call them, robots for disaster relief. And the examples that they show here is on the end of a human index finger, how teensy tiny these little robots are.
Yes, and SHRIMP stands for Short Range Independent Micro Robotic Platforms. So it's actually not an underwater one. It's just very small, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what's really cool about this, and we've talked about this many times on the show, is the fact that we're getting better and better at shrinking down the size of technology to where you can create things like the shrimp, where the idea would be it's so small that you could go into various hazardous environments. We've talked about swarming before.
Exactly.
You don't need to program the individual robot to do a lot of things, but you program the swarm to do stuff. And
you can leverage processing external to that device to actually control all of them. You don't need to load up and consume battery for processing on the devices if you're able to communicate with them effectively.
Yep. And so this is really about a DARPA effort to allow this to happen. And the fact that they're driving more and more investment into fund research and development into these very, very small robots. And the cool part is just what's going to happen once we start having many of these,
right?
And what are the different use cases that you can use as you scale the tech down and increase the processing power through external processing.
Right. To me, the most intriguing portion is going to be energy consumption. If there are ways of transmitting energy to these devices via a light stream, a laser, some sort of radiation.
Lasers.
Yeah. That, to me, would be really where things get super intriguing, because you can't put an enormous battery pack on these things that would double or quintuple the weight for them to be effective. And then if they are able to make in a microscopic way the same kind of things we just saw with those the dodecahedrons, you could use this for medical purposes to capture things that needed to be removed. You could use it for environmental cleanup so that you could disperse things like this in the ocean and have them capture oil spills or things like that. The use cases, like you said, Michael, are just going to be incredible as we take it into the next steps. But they have to be feasible.
They have to be feasible.
And the battery has to last long enough for them to do something meaningful.
Yeah, and I think that's some of the biggest challenges right now. And that's why, identifying energy sources, can it gain energy from the environment itself that it's in? So if you imagine one's cleaning up oil slicks,
right,
can they use motion of ocean currents or water movement to,
harvest the energy?
Spin a little
turbine.
Turbine, yes. I was going to say like a wheel on the side of an old mill.
Well, that's kind of a turbine.
As a simple way of like a little paddle boat, right?
It
doesn't have to be a full-on turbine. That's a lot more complex. And this is a little small thing that just needs small amount of energy.
Yeah. I'm imagining kind of like the wind turbines that are not the enormous bladed things that you might see on the coast of North Carolina or in Austria or somewhere, but, you know, the ones that are like the Möbius strips.
Yeah.
You know? And you're right. It takes very little movement to make that.
Möbius strips are so cool looking.
We have one on the playground, or one of the playgrounds in our neighborhood, which is kind of fun, because you say, okay, climb up on this end. At one point, gravity takes over. Speaking of small bug-sized robots, you found this really cool article from Rolls-Royce, of all companies.
Yes. Yeah, so here's a use case. Can you take these small little robots and have them do vehicle maintenance inspections? So, you know, just dump a jar on the car, and all these little roach-looking critters come out and can crawl into the engine, inspect for, you know, hairline cracks, wear and tear, whatever.
And repair.
Stuff that's really difficult to see. I mean, mm-hmm. as somebody who has taken the car in for repairs in the
last
year. Recently was maintenance, which also included a repair. It's like, you guys just fixed this. Why didn't you see this, right? Well, had I had a Rolls Royce and then a little fleet of these little roaches, maybe they could have seen it the first time they took the engine apart.
Well, they're starting with aircraft engines, yes. I think, right? Yeah. And Rolls Royce has done...
Hey, if I had a Rolls Royce aircraft engine, I'd be pretty happy.
Air Force Michael.
That's right. I would let you use it.
You would?
Yeah.
I'd be able to come on board? Yeah, well, that's true. That'd be awesome. The Games at Work jet.
It'll take you to nowhere.
Probably, yeah. Very few places.
Even if we had it, just fuel would be too expensive. Solar powered.
So remembering some of the conversations we've had before about what Rolls-Royce does and their predictive maintenance, mm-hmm. imagine if you're able to insert and inject these kind of small cameras, checking for, like you said, the hairline fractures.
Camera on a snake.
Recognizing where there might be buildup, right? So inside of an engine, the crudlies do come from occasion. If you could shoot them with, say a laser.
Laser.
Then you could take this out.
Scope on a rope.
The video that Rolls-Royce has produced on this almost looks like you have this snake going into an injection port in the engine, which, specifically designed to allow this endoscopic-related robotic bug thing to check it out.
And see, this is the whole thing, right? I watch The Matrix. And what are the creatures that attack them in the real world? They're like little flying snakes with little appendages that come out.
Scary stuff.
With lasers.
I think we're starting to hear a theme on this too, aren't we?
It's really cool. And again, it's all about you're getting down to miniaturization
yep.
on robotic technology. You're getting down to highly efficient energy use because, I mean, it would really stink to have one of these little things crawling in the engine and it run out of power.
And just stay there and clog right. things up.
Now, the thing that was going to make it better has actually made it worse.
Unless they were decomposable.
Decomposable.
Right?
Roach robots.
I prefer not to think of them as roaches.
They look like little roaches.
Well, a little bit.
They've got four legs. They look like little roaches.
I know.
They have four legs. But they've got this flattened silver body, like a silver roach.
But they've got this triangle out in front of them that looks like they're seeing things.
Yes.
Remember the roaches that we saw that you could control? They were kind of that hybrid machine thing.
They actually put
they put a chip on them.
Sensor.
And then you could shock them into turning left or right.
Yes, into the roach's head.
Yeah.
That's what we need. Why not just use real roaches?
Yeah.
They're really good at getting into little tiny spaces. And then you have roaches with AI brains.
Because all we need to do is take a species that's managed to survive everything and provide them hyper-intelligence.
Stop. A roach with a gun is a good roach with a gun. We've got to put a link to Charles Barkley's Saturday Night Live commercial on roaches with guns.
Okay, I haven't
seen
it,
hilarious.
But it sounds like it's worth looking
hilarious.
At.
It was this past season on Saturday Night Live. He was doing a commercial about, you don't want the chemicals in your house, blah, blah, blah. It's all bad. You got roaches. You keep your house clean, but you still have roaches. So you don't want chemicals. So what we've done is we've bred, specially bred roaches and trained them to use assault rifles. And the great thing is you just need a couple of them, and they will breed and train their offspring to use assault. And the family's sitting there at the dinner table, and it's like, pew! It tells you it's working.
All right, yeah.
I will find that, and we will put that in the show notes.
That'll be fun to watch. So speaking of fun, we've talked about Boston Dynamics on a couple of different occasions, both when they were part of Google and after SoftBank acquired them, on their variety of robotic creatures. Creature is probably the wrong word. A variety of robots, purpose-driven ones. And a feed that came across recently here talks about their mini dogs, or Spot Mini, I think is what they're called, Spot Mini robot dogs, and how they're planning to bring them rapidly to market. So reminiscent of some of the Tesla conversations we've heard of late, of ramping up production very quickly and going from individual builds to bigger sets to mass market. The anticipation is that these Spot Minis are going to be in the tens of thousands of dollars, so it's not something that every household will have, like an Aibo kind of thing. But I was very intrigued by the notion that they are considering them a platform more than anything else, right? They're trying to create them as a platform so that other third-party companies can mount their devices on top of this platform to be able to use them. So I found that to be interesting. I also found to be interesting their hour-and-a-half battery life. So to me, an hour-and-a-half battery life is pretty good. And the use cases, especially highlighting what's going on in Japan right now and the anticipated number of healthcare workers and folks that can take care of an aging population that is not quickly being replaced by current generations, how robots are being considered the way to help take care of the elderly. I'm not sure that this particular platform is the way that I would imagine, you know, my mom getting taken care of and having her pills given to her, or light household chores being done, or mow the lawn. Not nearly cute enough, but it's not just a cute thing.
No. And I'm looking at the picture that they have with the article.
Yeah.
And the really interesting part is the neck of the robotic dog.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the platform.
Folds.
Yes.
And so you can see it extending out and forward to get,
right,
you know, distance. And you talk about a platform. Right now, just with the placement of the screws and the shape of the pincher,
yep,
kind of looks like eyes and a mouth.
Right.
And they've changed the pincher. They've got like a rubber part, I guess, to be a little bit softer. So
right,
that gives it kind of like lips or teeth. And now I imagine platform. Well, what would you put at the end of a telescoping arm if you were going to sell it for people? I can see security devices. Let's just
sure,
leave it at that.
You could do security devices.
And for an hour and a half, you had a little swarm of these. You could actually have a good perimeter patrol set up where every, depending on how fast it charges,
mm-hmm,
right, you'd have six, and two of them are constantly charging.
Right.
Every 45 minutes, you rotate them through. So I immediately go to the dystopian view of this.
Well, that's easy to do.
It's really easy to do, especially if, I mean, we talked about this last time, you know, on how it moves upstairs, how it can handle, how it trots, how it runs, et cetera. I think the platform use for home and health, you're right, this is the wrong robot for that.
Just from a human interaction perspective, right?
It's highly functional. It's actually really cool in a lot of ways. I think safety, rescue, natural disasters, etc. This would be great.
Mm-hmm.
They really need to work on aesthetic design make it less frightening. But then again, did you watch Big Six?
Nope. I know about it, but no. I mean, that was a very friendly-looking robot,
yes,
right? Yes.
But it's, I mean, aesthetic design can also be
disarming.
Disarming is a good word for it. deceptive.
Well, that too, right? Just because something is smiling and happy looking at you doesn't necessarily...
Hi.
My understanding of the platform concept is that you've got locomotion from the base, which we saw from last week too, and its ability to detect and avoid obstacles, even without vision, like we talked about last week. And as a platform, then you can place other things on it. So that neck and the way the neck articulates, that's only one version of the platform. Mm-hmm. You could imagine, just like we have for industrial robots today, that this dog would go back to its charging port, and then it would swap out one attachment for another. So there might be a camera that goes on it. There might be an arm that can grasp things that goes on it. There might be a whole variety of other things.
Yes.
So the human interaction is key.
Yep.
Which leaps me immediately back to the importance of voice and voice activation, authentication, identity, that makes all of this super crucial, so that when you say stop, I'm actually your owner.
You know? So I was at a party last night, and at the party the host had two big dogs, right? And one of them was a new big dog.
Oh, young one.
Yes. A youngling. It hadn't learned no yet.
And it was very friendly.
It was real friendly. And so you think about that. When you tell your robot no means no, it needs to know that no means no. You know?
Unless it doesn't know.
I don't know. No?
No? Does it need to know now?
Now. No.
No.
It needs to know before now.
Okay. So... super, super, super cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right, switching gears. Not switching gears, but switching screws for a moment. We have a really interesting augmented reality element that I came across from Amazon, because I've encountered this problem here recently too, where I've had a table that was missing washers, and I needed to get an extra washer for that table. So I went to the local hardware store with the washer that I needed, and I was able to say, I need one like this. And they go, oh, okay, go over here, and you'll get one that you need like this. And then I got it, and I was able to get out of there. But that experience was long.
So that 10-cent washer took...
Gas, time.
Gas, driving time.
Undoing things, putting things back together. And then also I have to keep those washers handy so that when we put the table back together, I can find them again. Otherwise, I'll be making another trip to the store.
Get more washers.
Right, because I have the washer in my wallet so that I don't lose it, and I probably won't be able to spend
it. Forget it by then.
Yeah. So Amazon's part finder concept to me is super intriguing, that you say, look, if you want to find what you're looking for, place it down on a surface, place it next to something that we know defines size, like a penny, and... off you go.
Yeah. No, I like the approach that they did. And the person who wrote the article is like, oh, man, who carries cash? What, right? And it's like, that's not the point. That really isn't the point. It's you have a reference object that is a known size. And he's like, oh, I didn't get the head right. It was like Phillips instead of, standard, blah, blah, blah. It's like, you don't
that's
get
an
it.
Easily solvable
These
problem.
These are solvable problems. This is, I think, just a fascinating approach. I'm surprised we haven't seen this before. I'm not surprised that we're seeing it now. And I absolutely expect it to get better and better and better, because the more people trying it, the more people doing it,
the better
the data you get.
AI gets, yep.
Yeah. The learning algorithm can only improve.
Right. And which goes all the way through to the placement of furniture and all kinds of other good stuff that we've been talking about before, because you'll be able to say, look, I know what the size of that couch is, and because I see that couch in a picture of a room, and I've learned the size of that couch and that manufacturer, da-da-da-da-da, I know all the other dimensions around it.
Yep.
Right? This is only the beginning.
You only need one reference object to figure out the entire room.
Right. A squared plus B squared
equals 27.
Super, super cool. So another way of thinking about how you see things and how you understand them was from a BBC article, and actually it was some videos that you've been watching for some of your major thespian works. So yes. Talk to us about this on a podcast where they're not seeing it just yet.
So this past spring we did Ruddy Gore, which mm-hmm. is a Gilbert and Sullivan show about dead ancestors coming back to torture the current Baron if he doesn't commit his daily crime. And I was one of the dead ancestors, and I was trying to figure out how to do...
How to be dead?
Good dead makeup. And so I had search, and this one makeup artist does a lot of videos. Her name is, and I'm going to butcher the pronunciation, Mirjana Kika Milosevic. That's
probably
as good as
close.
I can say it.
Yep.
And she has all kinds of videos on there doing different makeup techniques. The one that I found was how to make yourself look gaunt. Mm-hmm. Right, and basically she sits in front of her computer, she has a camera on, and she talks you through the concepts, and she does
shows
her face
you
in real time.
Yeah.
And then she'll like do a before and after shot, and you're like, holy crap, that's amazing. Well, I remember a couple of years ago finding her again around Halloween time, and she did The Princess Bride.
Oh, mm-hmm,
right.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's like, I'm going to look like the character from The Princess Bride. Let me show you how. Blah, 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 blah. Well, she is phenomenal. It is amazing what she's done. And so this video actually is showcasing her work. It's about a minute and a half long. Mm-hmm. It shows lots of different examples, like headless.
Yeah.
And not a blue screen, you know, chroma key, take out the part. No. Literally
makeup.
Via makeup. So she sits on a black background and... She will paint parts of herself black. She'll, like, you know, show a twisted up stomach, so she'll paint what it would look like. You could squeeze the center of the body and then twist it around. And it's just the coolest thing. If you haven't seen her work, go to the website, gamesatwork.biz, click on the show notes for this show, and click on the link to the BBC article. It is phenomenal.
Yeah. I was super impressed as well, and just the invisibility that she does because of the black screen, you know, it looks like someone is drinking tea who isn't there.
Yes.
And it's terrific.
Yeah, it's just the coolest thing.
So speaking of fantastic and incredible, and not the Incredibles, but incredible, I came across, through my love of Lego, from several different vectors, the Austin Martin DB5 from James Bond. This is one of the ones that Sean Connery drove around long time ago, and this particular Lego model is incredible itself. The machine guns that show up, the ejector seat that happens, the bulletproof shield, the wheels that pop out to shred the other guy's tires, all in this Lego model. Super deluxe cool. And we'll have to see about when that might join some of the other vehicles I've built from Lego in my collection.
Yes.
Pretty soon.
Only about 1,300 pieces to make this thing.
Yeah, but it's not the Millennium Falcon, which is good. So, you know, because that one was, like, ridiculously expensive. This one's expensive, too, but not as crazy expensive as that.
Yeah, I saw this. It was pretty interesting. I don't think I would get this one ever. I like Bond, but I like cars. But the lines are more Lego lines than the Aston Martin lines.
Yeah.
But they've done a really good job of making it close.
Yeah, and it's hard. It's hard to get them exactly straight. I mean, I've seen some of the Ferrari examples. I've seen the VW examples.
Yeah.
I've got two Ghostbusters Ecto-1s that I've built, and they're pretty spot on.
Well, that's a boxy car.
Yeah, well, it is. You know, a hearse is a little bit boxy. That's true. But I love
it because it holds a big box.
Yes, a feet first one. So to round out our coffee fueled show, Michael, we do oftentimes ask about games that are being played and have been played, and you have one amazingly.
I have two.
You have two. Whoa.
I have two.
Two.
I have one that we put in before the show started.
Ooh, and then one after.
Yes. So the one before. Saw this one. It was like the game of the day.
Yeah.
It's called Squashy Bug. Mm. Basically, you're an ant.
Yeah.
You go right and left. That's all you do. And giant feet are walking by, and you're trying to collect coins, and you get squashed. And it gets really hard really quick. I think I'm level 7, you dip in for 5, 10, 20 seconds at a time. That's it
yep.
before you die.
Right.
Typical, kind of like Crossy Road, where you get coins, you use the coins to buy different bugs.
Oh, okay. Right? So that's where...
And then they want you to do in-app purchase, but you don't have to if you just...
Are happy being the one bug you are.
Right. Or over time, you'll build up... Every once in a while, they'll give you a gift of 100 bug, 100 coins. Every once in a while, you'll get a gift of another bug. Right? Kind of fun. But the game that I tested, I've only launched it twice, is the new LEGO AR Studio.
Ooh.
So what this is at WWDC, LEGO showed off their concept game of AR integration between real-world LEGO sets
mm-hmm.
and AR kit on the iPad or on your iPhone to where you could play additional games, right?
Right.
And explode it out.
And have storylines
yeah,
going
yeah.
on. I remember seeing that, yep.
I think this is the first step in that. So LEGO AR Studio is you map the environment.
Mm-hmm.
You get a start with a free LEGO set. And it could be like a train kit or...
Fire department, right? Whatever, yeah.
You collect the gold bricks. The gold bricks are going to be the currency, I can mm-hmm. tell, to eventually go from the free model that it is right now into a paid model. So you can then build sets. You can tweak them. You can zoom in and look around. And I think this is the start of the app that they showed at WWDC.
Interesting.
So if you haven't had a chance to look at it, LEGO AR Studio. We'll have a link in the show notes, and it's pretty awesome.
Oh man, I am wanting to go there already right now. So maybe we'll end the show here, and that's
think
what we'll do.
Time, so then we can play some Legos.
All right. Well, hope you guys enjoyed this show as much as we did doing it, and we're looking forward to catching you again here on our next edition of Games at Work. Biz.
Biz. See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.